to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for the day, Greta Anderson. Thanks for joining me. Later in the show, our studio here at 410 Douglas will be swarmed by local musicians, music DJs, producers, and promoters, all in anticipation of our St. Patrick's Day event, more specifically our Third Thursday Cafe, featuring live music played before an audience that could include you and broadcast live over the airwaves to an audience that could also include you. So if you appreciate live local music, especially when it's free, stick around for that segment. It's hard to believe March is halfway through and the official start of spring just a week away. To start the show, I've got one story that looks back to winter and another that looks forward to seed planting time. Earlier this month, the Iowa DNR released details about two wolves shot and killed in Iowa back in December, one in northwest Iowa, the other in southeast Iowa. The shooters thought they were killing coyotes, but then had doubts and turned themselves and their quarry into authorities, who sent genetic samples to a California lab that recently came back with the report, 100% wolf. Wolves, of course, are native to Iowa, but before a couple years ago, had not been seen for decades. I spoke to Vince Evelsizer, a wildlife biologist with the Department of Natural Resources.
In both cases, they felt like they were shooting a coyote when they pulled the trigger. In the first case, in northwest Iowa, they were out coyote hunting and shot this one when it was bedded down on a terrace. In the second case, it was a late-season deer muzzleloader that was out on an afternoon-evening hunt for deer when it saw this animal and just thought it was a big coyote, so he shot at it, and then he had another chance to shoot at it and then hit it. So in both cases, they mistook it for a coyote.
The DNR is taking this occasion to inform Iowans that it is possible to see a wolf in Iowa, and it's important not to shoot at coyotes that seem unusually large.
The wolves are at least twice the size of a coyote. Most of the Great Lakes wolves weigh 70 to 100 pounds. Most adult coyotes weigh 30 to 40 pounds. Wolves are heavier set, especially through the upper shoulders and the head. Wolves' heads are typically more square. The ears look smaller in relation to the head. Coyotes, on the other hand, have a more pointed snout, and the ears look larger in relation to the size of the head. There are times when it can be tricky to tell size or scale if the animal's out there at a distance. Maybe it's in some brush, or maybe it's out in an open snowy field where it's hard to tell size in reference to the background vegetation. And so we're encouraging folks to be sure of your target.
I asked Vince Evelsizer why Iowans shoot coyotes in the first place.
Typically, they like to do so for a couple of reasons, because they're a predator, and that can help things like deer. This is one idea. The other thing, too, is folks like to pursue them for their pelt value.
Some research on the web showed that coyote pelts were going for $50 to $100. One other reason people shoot coyotes is that in Iowa, the hunting season on them is year-round. For those who like to hunt, coyotes are the only game to be had from early January on. This open season is an artifact of the days when coyotes were known to predate small farm livestock such as sheep and chickens.
With Iowa being a farm state, having the hunting season open for coyotes year-round gave folks the flexibility to shoot a coyote, especially if it was bothering their livestock. We have fewer coyote livestock issues than we used to in the past, though.
Coyotes are by no means doing poorly in Iowa. Like Iowa's deer, they've made a huge comeback. In fact, on some nights, I can hear a pack singing not far from my farmhouse window. On the other hand, the wolves shot in 2014 were the first confirmed wolf sightings in Iowa for some 80-odd years. Wild populations exist in Minnesota and Wisconsin, but any wolves that come to Iowa are likely to be lone wolves, out roaming alone in search of better hunting grounds. As a side note, just because they are lone wolves doesn't mean they are male. While the wolves shot this past December were males, the two wolves shot in 2014 were females.
What we've seen here with wolves and what some of the wolf research indicates from places like Minnesota is that socially, it may be the male or the female that'll roam or disperse or leave the pack for a while and then come back. So that's a little different than other large predators like mountain lions, where so far it's usually the younger males that disperse or travel long distances.
The fact that all of these four wolves were shot is a problem, especially the most recent two, after the federal government relisted the species as endangered in February of 2015. Shooting these creatures is, in theory, a federal offense and normally would be a state offense, subjecting the perpetrators to fines and revocation of their hunting license. Vince Evelsizer says that Iowa DNR weighed heavily its decision not to cite the shooters.
The folks that shot those animals, they weren't cited, and we understand that some folks are mad about that. We had to make some decisions as an agency on the best way to handle that. People are not used to wolves being in Iowa, and so that's something to account for when you're dealing with these cases. That being said, where we feel like as an agency we can help out here is, okay, you know, it's time to make folks aware that we've got a few wolves coming into our state and just want people to know that. And so maybe that's not a larger than normal coyote. Maybe that's a wolf, for example, for the coyote hunters. It's really tricky. We really don't like seeing a wolf shot, and it may seem fairly out of the ordinary that we wouldn't cite those people, you know, for doing that and then letting them off the hook, so to speak. But the other side of the coin here is that if we cite the first one or two people, you know, or three or four cases, when we haven't had wolves to any measurable extent for, you know, 60 to 80 years in our state, and we immediately ticket those people after they voluntarily cooperate right away after shooting them, I think the message sent to the rest of the public then would be to not cooperate with us and to shoot, shovel, and shut up after they shoot that animal. We just are encouraging folks to be very sure of their target and that there is a possibility that there could be a wolf out there, that you could encounter one. The odds are low, but we definitely don't want any more wolves shot.
And that was Vince Evelsizer, wildlife biologist for the Iowa DNR. I contacted federal Fish and Wildlife Service authorities who said that their investigations into these two cases were, quote, ongoing. They told me nothing else. You're listening to Local Talk, and I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson. And I wanted to plant one more bug in your ear before we turn to our regular guest, Leanne Harder of Story County. As the wife of a frustrated beekeeper, I've heard an earful about nicotinoids, pesticides that are used as a coating on most commercial seeds used by grain farmers, the type whose fields surround our place. When farmers plant their seed in the spring, the dust from this coating erupts and compromises local bee populations. Well, it turns out that in Iowa, this seed coating may not even be very effective, at least in soybeans. For the past 2 years, a Practical Farmers of Iowa member from northeastern Iowa, Dick Sloan, planted soybeans with and without this seed coating and found no difference in yield. He reported his findings on a PFI web seminar that was held last week and was joined by ISU soybean pest researcher Matt O'Neill of the ISU Entomology Department. I talked with Matt about this pesticide.
Neonicotinoid refers to a class of insecticides that have some pretty special abilities. One is their broad spectrum. They kill a lot of different things, a lot of different insects. They are not very toxic to humans, so they're safe, especially safe compared to other types of insecticides. And they're what's called systemic. So if you apply them to a plant, they'll be absorbed by the plant and move through the plant tissue. And this has been taken advantage of by people who sell seed, because you can coat the seed with the neonic insecticide and plant it such that the plant gets this protection from, you know, emergence on. And the use of the seed treatment is I think the order is corn first, soybeans, and then wheat. And corn, I think it's like 90% of the corn sold has this type of seed treatment on it. It's really picked up in the last 10 years or so.
O'Neill studies soybeans and says that in Iowa, north of I-80, the primary pest for which neonicotinoids are used is soybean aphid, an exotic species which arrived around the year 2000 and produced huge outbreaks in 2003. Neonics were seen as the answer.
The problem with the neonics as a seed treatment is that the protection doesn't last the entire length of the plant's life. And what my lab and other labs have found is that there's a window of protection, but it doesn't extend deep enough into the season to provide protection for when the aphid really comes on strong, at least in Iowa. So in our comparison of a foliar application to a seed treatment, we found that foliar applications, especially if you apply them as needed, work better in terms of efficiently using an insecticide than a seed treatment, because there are times where you simply don't need it. And you don't know that when you plant the seed. You don't know if there's going to be an outbreak in June or July. So if there isn't, you've spent money on something that you didn't need.
The parameters differ for different crops in different parts of the country, where planting dates and types of pests and their emergence dates differ. For instance, neonic seed treatment has been found to be of significant benefit in the South, where the panoply of pests includes the dreaded kudzu bug. Neonicotinoid pesticides are facing their 10-year review by the EPA, so we will be hearing more and more about them this year. In their review, the EPA will weigh the benefits of the neonics against the environmental costs, which are much more controversial. In the meantime, farmers dealing with low commodity prices are looking for any way they can to cut input prices. And one way to do that is to buy what O'Neill calls naked seed, seed without pretreatments, at least without neonic pretreatment. And from what his research says, that would be a good bet for Iowa farmers planting soybeans, as long as they keep a close enough eye on their fields to notice if and when pests appear. O'Neill emphasizes that he cannot speak to the issue of corn and its pests, but encourages farmers to stay curious about the topic and even perform side-by-side trials, like those done by Dick Sloan. Follow the links on our webpage on khoifm.org and contact Practical Farmers of Iowa if that interests you. And, of course, we'll also post a link to Matt O'Neill's faculty page at ISU and to the web seminar he participated in, where he describes how the roughly 40-day window of activity of neonicotinoid seed treatment does not reach into July, the month when soybean aphid invasions are most common. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Greta Anderson, and I've been joined in the studio by Leanne Harder, the outreach person for Story County. Welcome, Leanne.
Good morning.
Do you have trouble getting up this morning? After
a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it's dark out, which is unusual in the morning here. So you've got a lot of stuff for us to talk about. I understand things are businesses picking up over at the county offices with tax season approaching.
It is. And I do have a message from our county treasurer, Renee Tweet. She wants to remind everyone that the second half of our tax payments are due by the end of the month of March. If you do miss that March 31st deadline, there's a penalty of 1.5% that attaches. So it's definitely worth everyone's while to get taxes paid by the end of March. They will also have extended hours on that deadline, March 31st. It's a Thursday. They are going to open at 7 a.m. and stay open until 6 p.m. And that's in the admin building over at Nevada in what we call the former courthouse.
Okay, that's 906 Street.
906 Street, correct, yep.
Okay, so pay your taxes before April Fool's is the rule.
Exactly.
Okay. And you've brought here some information about the Planning and Development Department that over at Story County. evidently you just can't do anything you want with your land.
You can't. And this is part of something regular I want to bring to you and your audience, just to get some new information out there about what some of the county departments do. People know a lot about elected officials, but there are a lot of departments that fall under the Board of Supervisors that people aren't necessarily aware of. And this is one. Planning and Development Department has actually existed since the late 1950s. And actually what you just said is kind of a common question that they hear in the department. What is my property zone? Why do I need a permit? I didn't know I needed a permit. I'm thinking of moving from the city to the county. What do I need to know? Those are some common questions. So, yeah, you do need a permit. There are a lot of tools available from the county to help you locate your property, see how your property is zoned, and all that kind of good stuff.
Okay. So you need a permit to build anything is what you're saying.
You do. You do need a permit to build.
What about just a little shed?
You do need a permit for that, too.
Oh,
there
my
are some
goodness.
Size restrictions. At least you may not necessarily need a permit, but you wouldn't need to follow the regulations. So it's worthwhile contacting the Planning and Development Department.
Okay, so before the mid-1950s, it was just a free-for-all. You could do whatever you want. Then the county developed this department to kind of help keep things under control and probably to collect some taxes because a permit costs a little money, right?
A permit, it's not very – they're not very expensive in Story County. They're based on the value of construction. We don't have a building code, so it's strictly a zoning permit in Story County as compared to some other counties where – when you have building codes, fees do get quite high.
Okay, so it's a bargain, huh? So how do you find out what zone you live in?
That's a great question. We have a couple ways you can do that. The easiest way is to go to our website, which is storycountyiowa.gov.
Okay, wait a second. I've got my computer right here. I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Right here. So. Okay.
And then once you get to our website, there's a a picture banner on the very front page, and to the right it says Citizen Help Center, and underneath that it says GIS Maps. Simply click on that.
Okay, GIS Maps. Oh, I see it right here at the top. GIS Maps, it's halfway down the list, okay?
And then that takes you, unfortunately, out of our website, but to another maintained through the Story County Assessor, Ames City Assessor's. What you can do there, you can search by an address. You can search by a parcel number if you know it.
Okay, it says Beacon.
Beacon, yeah. Beacon is the provider that that manages this website for Story County. The website you're at right now is all the real estate information that both assessors have on file for properties in Story County.
All properties or just the non-incorporated?
All properties.
Okay.
Because our county assessor actually does properties outside city limits, excluding the city of Ames. Ames has their own city assessor.
Okay,
so you'll
all
have,
right.
I mean, you can, if you're curious about property for sale, you can type in the address and get all the most current information on it.
Oh, so there's other uses for this.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. This is actually kind of an underused site. I think we're seeing a lot more use. I know a lot of real estate agents and development community members really rely on this for day to day.
Okay, so I'm at the Beacon site. I'm going to type in my address, and there it is. It even did an autofill for me.
Yeah, it should.
Search, and I find out that I am in A1.
You are in zoning. A1, and you can click on that.
Uh-huh.
There's a link. Now, there are some cases where that link will just say contact planning and development.
Right.
If that's the case, you have two different zoning districts on your property. So
okay.
You definitely need to call the department.
All right.
But what that link just took you to was the applicable regulations for your department or for your property.
Okay. So A1 is an agricultural district.
Yep. And you can scroll through the regulations and read, and then by all means follow up with planning and development for questions, because you know it is code, and so sometimes code can get kind of busy to read and difficult to interpret.
Right.
The other really magnificent tool on the Beacon website is you can, in the upper left-hand corner, also use the mapping capability.
Right.
And you can see what your property looks like. You have most.
Yeah, I see that it's gotten pretty weedy over at my house.
Well,
it must be mid to late summer.
There are three. The third tab in from the left on the very top.
Okay.
You can click on map.
All right.
And that will take you to just an image of your property, an aerial image.
Mm-hmm.
You can see all sorts of things there. You can see floodplain. If there's floodplain on your property, you can see the street right-of-way. You can see the property boundaries and dimensions. This is our geographic information system then for
right.
Story County.
It's like Google Maps, but
all the information Story County has.
Okay.
File.
So if there were a floodplain on my property, how would that be indicated?
On the left-hand side, there are a bunch of layers that you can turn
okay.
on and off. And
wow, that's cool.
I'm not sure what the one is called, but it might be FEMA layers.
Okay. Oh yeah, FEMA flood data.
And then there's a box in front of the
yeah,
and you just turn that on and it will come up a shade of blue. It
oh,
might be one
okay.
or two different shades of blue. Depending on the nature of the floodplain there.
Looks like we're in the clear.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it does look like you do not have floodplain on your property.
Well, that's cool. But I understand that floodplain is something that you manage.
It is. One of the hats I wear for Story County, I am the floodplain manager for the unincorporated portions of Story County. And actually, it's kind of a message I want to get out there. There are some upcoming changes to flood insurance that is brought forth by FEMA. The Federal Emergency Management Association, they are using some newly mapped procedures. And the acronym FEMA uses is the NMP.
Newly mapped procedures.
Newly mapped.
Procedures.
My understanding, this is a nationwide effort. And what there's a cause and effect. And the cause is the payout that FEMA has been doing for natural disasters over many years has caused the savings that FEMA has had and the National Flood Insurance Program has had to dwindle significantly.
Right. We've had a lot of floods, in other words, that they've had to pay for.
And not just floods, other natural disasters
right.
that may fall under that category. So in the flood insurance realm or world, they're increasing rates through an act of Congress to get rates more matching up to the actual risk of floodplain on the property.
Okay.
And that's what this is all about. So I'm going to encourage, whether you're inside city limits or outside city limits, if you have flood insurance, check with the individual with whom you've gotten that policy and make sure that you don't have to do anything for this upcoming deadline.
Okay.
And that would be April 1st is when those new
Another
rates
April 1st deadline.
Another April 1st. Yeah, I'm not sure about government and April Fool's Day.
Okay. So, is there anything else to talk about?
I do quickly want to mention that April, again, is National County Government Month. This is celebrated nationally every year by counties throughout the United States. Story County has done some small events over the past few years, and we're going to continue that tradition. We invite anyone in the area that's interested in knowing about county government to come over to the admin building. Again, that's the 906th Street address in Nevada. On Tuesday, April 6th, we'll have an open house from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. And then that same day, the Board of Supervisors will be doing the County Day of Recognition for Service. And on that day, they'll be recognizing the 2016 Citizen of the Year Award. And we're accepting nominations for that through March 18th.
2016 Citizen of the Year Award.
Citizen of the Year Award. For Story County. This is a new program the board started last year. The first two recipients were Dr. George Palitzos from YSS and Mayor Wally Loney from McCallsburg, well-deserved recipients. This is a program the board started to acknowledge those citizens that have gone above and beyond their meritorious service.
Isn't that McCallsburg mayor? Hasn't he been in office for just like ever?
He has. He actually no longer is mayor. Someone else has stepped up.
He retired,
he
but
did.
After many, 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 many years of service.
I think he set many records, not just Iowa, but possibly nationwide as well. And a wonderful individual. But I encourage anyone to contact me. We have application forms for that. And my email is lharter@storycountyiowa.gov.
L. Harter. At
storycountyiowa.gov. Really long email address, but you can also just call me, and I think you have my information online.
Yeah, Yeah, and we always link to Story County Government webpage, and just I have Story County Government in my phone as a contact.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have a switchboard. You can always get through to whoever you want to talk to.
And there's our website especially has so much information, and it's continually being all departments, individual departments are responsible for maintaining it. So we try really hard to make sure it's not a static information provider, that if there's something happening, like the need right now for election officials, the county auditor is great about getting information out there, making the process to apply simple and straightforward. So a lot of information on that. It's storycountyiowa.gov.
Right. And you probably do Twitter, too.
We have a Twitter feed. It's just Story County, Iowa. And we have Facebook, too. That's a little bit more tricky. It's Joseph Story is one of our names. And then just Story County is another one.
Okay.
They're linked together.
What's the story on Joseph?
That's whom we're named after.
Oh.
And I don't know if you'll recall, when Facebook first came out, you had to have a person it was assigned to. It was before you could have pages for government and stuff. And so that was how we had to be set up.
Joseph Story.
So we've had Facebook for quite a while.
Yeah, I
guess
so.
We're one of the original ones, I think.
All right. So once again, there's an open house on April 6th, mm-hmm. Tuesday, from 9 to 10, and then at 10 o'clock or 11?
10 o'clock is when the regular meeting, the Board of Supervisors, will begin, and they'll do a couple things. They'll do a proclamation recognizing April as National Government Month, but also the recognition of the Citizen of the Year Award as well.
And will that be announced before the event?
No.
The recipient?
No.
Oh, it's a surprise.
It is a surprise, and last year got pretty tricky to get two individuals there without them knowing it. And an excuse for them to get on the agenda. So,
Oh, is that right? You came up with a spurious reason for them.
And it had
cute.
Very appreciative of those individuals that helped get them there. It was a wonderful celebration of two incredible individuals.
Okay. Well, I think we've covered it all. Just once again, if you want to go onto that Beacon website, you can have a lot of fun. In fact, I've already used the Beacon website to look up. I knew somebody lived on a certain street, and I could put in kind of the range of addresses for that street, and then bang, find the person's name, the actual address, and send them my card. So that was very helpful.
It is a great tool. The only thing you cannot do is search by name.
Right. Okay.
But if you know an address or, like you said, even a street name, and you know it's the 100 to 700 block, it allows you to drill down. And then you can even skip that and just go right to the map and start searching by the map, just playing around with just the panning, like on Google Maps. They operate very similar.
Right.
It's a fun thing to do.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot, Leanne.
Thank you.
It was great to have you here, and we will see you again next month.
We will. I guess I won't be here.
All right. When we come back, an introduction to a type of music called shoegaze and an invitation to a special event this Thursday at the Pantorium. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for the day, Greta Anderson. The music you heard was a track from a British group called Slow Dive, and while it was playing, a swarm of musicians, music DJs, promoters, and producers invaded the studio to talk about music on and at KHOI and to get your sights focused on a special opportunity for you this coming Thursday, just 4 days from now. So we've got one of our best DJs here at the station, Steve Weiler, whose show Little Hits airs on Tuesdays at 10 p.m. And we have Ron Carson, the person behind our Third Thursday musical events, which have been occurring simultaneously on KHOI and at KHOI every third Thursday of the month. And finally, we have Brian and Rachel Dudley, who are part of the band that will be playing this Third Thursday at our station at 410 Douglas Street. The band's name is Liana, and it is billed as a shoegaze band, which is where we'll start the conversation. What is shoegaze music? DJ Steve Weiler is our resident expert in this genre, and it makes, I understand, it's a big portion of your Tuesday night show. So.
It is. I play shoegaze and rock, and I actually, my show started off as just a rock and roll show. But when I realized that there were other DJs that did basic classic rock and, you know, usual rock music, I decided that I'd throw in a little shoegaze. And sometimes I play just shoegaze on my show. And mainly what it is it's a genre that emerged in the late 80s and the early 90s. It started in Britain. And it was part of the British indie rock scene. And the reason it's called shoegaze is due to the band's motionless performing on stage.
They motionless performance.
Yeah, where they kind of just stand and gaze at their shoes while they're playing their chord progressions.
Okay. Now, Does this have anything to do with pedals at their feet that they're
manipulating? Oh, yeah, that has something to do with it as well. But the music is kind of transcendent. It kind of gets you into this kind of hypnotic state. So These bands would perform, and they would just kind of be kind of gazing at their shoes. And, yes, that has something to do with it as well. It's just the distortion pedals, too. Yes.
The distortion pedals. Yep. Okay. And it's what you might call introspective, as we just heard.
Yeah, it's kind of overwhelmingly loud with, like, long, droning riffs, waves of distortion, and cascades of feedback.
Oh,
yes.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Well done.
Vocals and melodies that are, like, melded into walls of guitars, creating a wash of sound where no instrument was distinguishable from the other.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so
instruments.
It kind of all melded together. Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay. So a wall of sound. I've heard of that, but that's from an earlier era.
Yeah, that started with Phil Spector back in the, I think, early 60s. Phil Spector is the one that created that wall of sound, and shoegaze kind of adopted that sound.
Okay. Yeah. And it is a form of live music, though.
Right.
But it has a really highly produced sound, like you might produce in a studio.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It has this kind of, when I first discovered it, it was, something like I had never heard before. It was just a completely different sound, almost put me in a hypnotic state, kind of like ethereal in a way.
Yeah,
kind of
otherworldly.
Otherworldly, yeah. Yes.
I was using my thesaurus this morning, and I came up with both of those words.
These are words that I came prepared with, right? I was looking at my thesaurus, too, this morning.
But actually, I was thinking of Jordan Mole's voice. So anyway, Brian, why don't we turn it over to you? And it makes a lot of sense that you guys, who do a lot of live music but also do a lot of production kind of work in your very own studio, Nova Labs, would be drawn to this kind of sound and you know, pursuit.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We have a ton of reverb and delays and things like that that we use on the music, and it also gives us a chance to kind of show off the vocal harmonies that we have going on in the band.
Right. Okay. So, and that's Jordan and Rachel.
Yep.
Rachel, do you have vocal training?
No.
You're just good at it.
I just sung along with the radio since I was little, and so no formal training. Okay. I probably should, but.
Okay, so the band features you, Rachel, on drums and vocals, Brian on guitar. This is from according to my notes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've also got a baritone guitar and a bass guitar?
Yep.
Okay, but no keyboards.
We've had keyboards in the past, and we're sort of messing around with having some in the future. Johnny, who plays a baritone guitar in the band and essentially started the band, actually, he's starting to he got a synthesizer module and some keys, and he's starting to jump back and forth a little bit between guitar and synth. So.
Okay. Yeah, because I mean, synthesizer is the instrument or that you would normally associate with this sort of blendy mm-hmm. kind of music.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
In our recording also, many of our songs have synth on them, and so we do incorporate it into our recordings, and we have in the past had a live synth player as well, one of whom was Ron Carson's daughter, Chloe, for a while before she moved to Minneapolis. But it's difficult to schedule five people for shows and practices and things like that. So after she left, we kind of threw up our hands we can't do it. So we forged on as a four-piece.
Oh,
since
cool.
Then. Yeah.
All right. And so you guys do gaze at your shoes.
Yeah. It's sometimes it's closer to tap dancing, depending on the different songs. Some of the songs, you're jumping in between tones so much. That's another sort of identifier with shoegaze music, I guess, is the tones shift throughout a song, sort of like a movement. You can have anything from very heavy distorted guitars to just really clean reverbed and delayed guitars and stuff like that within the same song. And, that makes it a lot of fun, but it means you do end up looking down at your feet a lot and tapping a lot of pedals.
Okay. Do you sort of feel different, or do you have a sort of different stage presence when you're doing this compared to when you're, rocking out with your band Strong Like Bear?
Kind of the nice thing about this band is I don't worry about stage presence whatsoever. We just play the songs and just really kind of go with it and float with the music,
Nice. Okay. Well, that certainly promises a fun, interesting, and cool experience for the listener. Why don't we listen to a 45-second clip, a small clip from the middle of your song, Sky Ladder, and maybe we'll have Steve talk about it. This is the title track to the band Liana's Sky Ladder CD, available through Nova Labs in the Ames Music Store, I presume. That was an excerpt from Sky Ladder by the band Liana, which will be playing a one-hour set this Thursday at the KHOI station, to which our listeners are invited, 7 p.m. That was really just wonderful. I love the sounds, and the, like you said, the vocal harmonies are distinct and, just interesting. So, Steve, later in the song, the vocalists have words that they sing. Mm-hmm. Here they're kind of using their voice as instruments.
Right. Yeah, and if you noticed in that sample there, it almost sounded kind of like 60s psychedelia in a way.
Right.
That's what it kind of reminded me of. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you guys are possibly the only shoegaze band in Iowa. Is that true?
There's one other know of called Basin, and okay. they're around. But there's not many in the state that we've been looking.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a genre that is not too well known here in the United States. As a matter of fact, it started in the late '80s in Britain, and it's never really made it to the U.S. market, mainly because in the early '90s, grunge rock came along. Nirvana and Pearl Jam. So bands like Ride, and which is a shoegaze band, and Slow Dive, they never really made it into the U.S. market at that time. But up until recently, about 5 or 6 years ago, they have this resurgence of shoegaze, which they're calling new gaze now. Yeah. So it's although I don't like to use that term, but
why not?
Well, I don't know. It just doesn't sound right. It's shoegaze will always be shoegaze, but it's, you know, of course, a play on words, calling it new gaze. But there are a lot of bands now that a lot of bands that are kind of adopted that shoegaze sound, and they're, you know, making new music. I'm trying to think of M83.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is a band that kind of incorporates shoegaze sound into their music. I don't know if you're familiar with M83. Asobi Seksu. Do you know her?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Well, she's Japanese. There's a lot of Japanese shoegaze bands, too, which I play on my show as well.
Okay, so, and that's at 10 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Yep, it'll be tomorrow night at 10 o'clock.
Okay. Do developments in technology, have they kind of helped this along, this new gaze movement?
I don't believe so. I think
it's old stuff.
It's kind of resorting. Well, it sounds pretty much similar to the older stuff. Okay. You're talking about the new stuff, right? The new gaze.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
I just think it's so. It seems like it's technology based.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the new technology that does get implemented is trying to recreate the old technology.
Right.
That's interesting. So okay, well. I've Googled Liana, and I've looked at your CD cover, and I'm pretty sure you have an interesting answer to the question about your name, which you will inevitably be asked on Thursday night when we have this party at our station. Blake Delaney will be the host, and you're nodding because you know Blake, and also because
that
you
guy.
And you have already performed here for a Third Thursday concert, so... I don't know. I feel funny about asking you that question about what your name means. I don't want to steal Blake's thunder, you know.
No, it's okay. Yeah. Johnny's wife, Terry, came up with the name. And it's sort of like, I mean, besides just being a pretty sounding name, and she thought it fit the music and, you know, and all of that. It also means, like vines in the jungle, like those big long vines that like Tarzan swings from and stuff. Those are called Liana.
Right.
So it has a very organic quality to it that we really liked.
And it's sort of that whole idea of transcendence. You can climb that vine on up. And,
yeah. We have a lot of songs with climbing and falling going on in them.
And there's a monkey on your CD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought. Oh, I saw a different one.
Huh. Oh, we have a T-shirt design that is kind of a...
Yeah.
Like a... Almost like a monkey gargoyle sort of creature climbing up vines.
Right.
And,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, the great thing about it is it sounds almost Irish. Liana.
Oh,
it does.
Yeah, it does.
Of course, we are having this
thing
on
you mentioned it.
St. Patrick's Day. So, anywho, well, you've never been to the rainforest.
No.
No.
Okay.
No.
You'll have to go sometime.
Yeah.
Okay, Ron Carson's been sitting here quietly. He's the one... who invited you to play at our Third Thursday Cafe in January, and he's the one who invited everyone into the studio. Ron, you made a great choice making Blake the MC.
Yeah, he was the person closest to being Dick Clark. I'm looking for a Dick Clark guy, and Blake Delaney filled the bill.
World's oldest teenager.
Well, maybe not that part.
Oh.
But I watched American Bandstand, you know, decades ago, and you know, where he'd come up to the band, you know, he'd introduce the band and go and share the mic, pass the mic. Well, he'd control the mic and interview each one. You know, what's your favorite color? But I wanted a little more depth than that. And Blake comes up with good questions. And he'll ask him, "Tell me about your name." And, we already know all about that. So if you're listening to this show,
no.
So he just killed his only good question. But,
he always comes up with good stuff. And,
yeah.
And then he's, you know, pops back down and the band plays some more. It's a really nice
rhythm. He knows when it's
rhythm.
Time to get out of the way and just let the band do the talking. And
he's a good singer, too.
Well, we haven't heard that here. Mm-hmm. Maybe someday we will.
Yeah.
He's a good DJ, too.
He's a good DJ.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he does Ghost in the Machine later on Thursday night. And, yeah, he does a good show. It's a live show, but the music is recorded. So for this, it's a live show, and the music is live, too. And I know he really likes that because it's, you know, it just has a different feeling when you know it's live and every note that's played, every word you say is going out. And, you know, if you mispronounce something or say something stupid or a Freudian slip.
Boy, no pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. Yeah. Live without a net. And I don't know who Annette is. Liana's sister.
This is the third Thursday Cafe.
It is. It
and
is.
That's just
third
thrilling.
And third Thursday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's. But the reason I invited Liana is I was at DG's one night. I can't remember what other bands are playing. But Liana sounded so lush and so beautiful. I could just – I close my eyes and imagine that going live over KHOI. And in fact, I'm bringing in a ringer for that. I'm on the tech crew, but I'm bringing in a reverb consultant. Oh. Adam Brimmeyer, am I pronouncing that right, from DG's?
Yep. He
has got the magic touch. He's going to come in and do the lush effects. I think if I did the sound for Liana, it would sound kind of flat. I'm not a shoegaze guy. I didn't even hear about it until my daughter joined a shoegaze band. What is that? And so now I know. But I'm going to need help, and so Adam has graciously agreed to come over and bring the magic box that's going to put reverb on everything.
He's run sound for us more than anybody else, so he really gets us. So it's a good choice.
He was certainly getting you that night. Yeah. It just sounded so dreamy.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything sounds better with reverb.
It does.
Oh, yeah.
It does.
More reverb.
We have a lot of sound guys that are sort of like, you know, really? More reverb? More? Really? You want more? But Adam's like, okay, you want too much? Okay.
Okay. Is reverb kind of like an echo?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what causes that ethereal, otherworldly sound that we were talking about earlier. The reverb does it all, pretty much.
Okay. Yeah. And so I was kind of wondering what the audience at a shoegaze performance does. I mean, Ron was closing his eyes and...
There won't be any slam dancing or anything. We should be okay, I think.
Are we to gaze at our shoes as well? Or?
I think so. Or just close your eyes and just, you know,
I'll
soak
be looking
it in.
At their pedal boards.
There you go.
Why'd he click that one on? Right? Oh, okay. I get it.
Well, just the Third Thursday Cafes in general, we are very lucky. You know, the listener, it's like you've got great music, you've got good sound, a nice venue, really unique kind of setting, and it's free. I mean, what's not to like? You guys have played here. What did you think of the whole event?
It was a really, really positive experience. All the volunteers that threw down and helped out, everything from sound to like decorating the cafe and all of the signs and things like that, it was very welcoming. We felt like we were treated like way better than we normally get treated. which we greatly appreciate. That was awesome. It felt like an event, you know.
The hospitality extended to the band as well.
Yeah. There you go. If you've never been to the Pantorium building, it is a historic building with tin ceiling and high ceilings. It's sort of shabby chic. And so let's see what else we got here.
Well, we could talk about the series itself. The Third Thursday Cafe, we started out with Strong Like Bear, and Brian and Rachel are also in that band, so they broke some ground there. That was our first Third Thursday, and we had some kinks to work out, and they're gracious enough to go first, and it was a really nice experience. And then we had Obsidian's Dream in February, and they took it in a little different direction. We actually had dancers that night. because we pushed some chairs out of the way so they could do that. And then, of course, this Thursday, St. Patrick's Day, Liana. And then next month, April, we've got Dr. Murdoch coming up, which is going to be really fun. And speaking of fun, in May, we're going to have Britches and Hoes Ukulele Group. And that's going to close out this series. We'll probably resume again in the fall. We're going to take the summer off and do things outside. But I've been really delighted with this series so far. Don't disappoint me now, guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is kind of like a summer, a free summer concert. You know, it's got that community spirit of that.
Definitely.
Maybe mixed with a house party or something.
It was a way to bring people into the studio that had never maybe even heard of KHOI before and bring them in and see what it's all about, what can be done, see the potential to this. And it was just an unutilized potential. Nobody else had the idea, so I did. You know, somebody had to do it, and so I took the initiative, and it's not something I usually do, but it just was an idea that just had to be realized.
Now, I don't know, Ron. A couple years ago, you were hauling around equipment on Thursday nights at a different place.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The depot. Yeah, the depot repo.
Right. Yeah, no, it's been really great for the station, too, for the us who volunteer here quite a bit. Cause,
great teamwork.
Yeah, and you know, it builds that sense of community and builds morale to have something really exciting going on every month.
Yeah.
So
it feels like an electric house concert, but like being broadcast so everybody can kind of like check it out, not have to leave home if they don't want to. And
right, but we do want you to leave home. We want you all to come over.
It's a lot more fun to have an audience to play for, so I hope some people come out.
We've had great audiences so far.
Oh, yeah.
And once again, don't disappoint me, people.
Okay, well, I think our time is up. We're going to go out with more of that song that we heard earlier by Liana Skyletter. Thank you so much, all of you. Steve Weiler, DJ of Little Hits, Tuesday at 10, Brian and Rachel Dudley, musicians, recording artists, the band Liana, and Ron Carson, KHOI guy.
All around man.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us,
Chris. Yes, thank you very much.
It's been great. Radio. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. In the first 10 minutes, I reported on wolf shootings in Iowa and spoke with Vince Evelsizer of the Iowa DNR about their significance. And I reported on research findings on neonicotinoid seed treatments with ISU Associate Scientist Matt O'Neill from the Department of Entomology. We also got some updates from Leanne Harder of Story County. Local Talk is replayed at noon and 7 p.m., so you can hear the show all over again or tell your friends to tune in to 89.1 FM. You can also stream the show at khoifm.org or download the show from our webpage. The show will appear as a story on our homepage, khoifm.org, with links relevant to the content. We do Facebook posts and Twitter, too, so you can always catch up to KHOI on social media. Our engineer today was Nadia Abdelazim. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard a track by the British shoegaze band, Slow Dive, and a track by the Ames shoegaze band, Liana. See them live this Thursday night at KHOI, 7 p.m. At KHOI, we have volunteers of all ages and descriptions. All you need is an enthusiasm for community. Please stop by the station to start your KHOI volunteer experience. Of course, your role as listener, as well as your generous financial support, is what keeps the lights turned on and the ideas continuing to come to fruition. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.